Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's what you have. We are... God, it's noon already. This, for whatever reason, this time slot, just everything goes seemingly in such accelerated fashion.
You're welcome.
Is that what it is?
It's me.
Is it just being around you?
I am accelerated fashion.
Well, we have been following the goings-on at Michigan State, and it always seems... I have trouble keeping the headlines straight, whether it is a lawsuit regarding the behavior of a basketball player, a football player, a former doctor, a former doctor's boss, a trustee, or an interim president or a president. I have to always say, okay, let's go back to square one. Let's get a refresher. Let's get me an explainer. Let's see where we are. One of the guys who's helping me out covering this is Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports, our old friend who's on Twitter, at Dan Wetzel, and joins us now on The Score. Dan, I know how closely you covered what has been going on at Penn State also, and it just amazes me that we have so many commonalities with a school operating as if it just doesn't understand how to get out of its own way.
Yeah, there's certainly similarities between the stories. There's definitely differences. I think what's stunning to me is that Michigan State didn't learn from Penn State and think about the guidelines and what to do and what not to do, because there's things that Penn State did well in the aftermath. There's things they didn't do well, and same with this case with Michigan State. And so it's almost amazing that you don't just say, "All right, we're going to do the things that Penn State did right, and we're going to go that route," because they really had a roadmap where maybe Penn State didn't. But this is in many ways Michigan State's reaction at this point of the game is worse than Penn State's.
One of the things folks will point to in a situation like this is that there are X amount of bad actors. There is a person here or a person there acting in a way that's obviously detrimental to the greater good. And it seems in the Michigan State instance that there is something endemic in the way their psychiatric and counseling services work with or don't work with students that makes this such a deeper problem. And I wonder if you found they're combining those two services for students and then not giving them health care or treatment or whatever, if that's the possibly bigger issue here that's caused so much of the devastation.
Well, I think it's two different angles on this, or two different, you know, silos of a story. The one that most people know about is the Larry Nassar case. And so that's a lot different than a sexual assault between two students. You know, Nassar is a doctor who systematically molested hundreds of girls. In a pedophile scandal that's, you know, the most prolific that we've seen. So how did that occur? And part of that was his own boss, the dean of his college, William Strample, is now arrested on his own, and not just for not monitoring or not handling Larry Nassar or complaints against Larry Nassar, but of sexual assault for himself. Mm-hmm. And just this incredibly boorish behavior where he would, you know, encourage women to send photos of them in exchange for missing a test or falling asleep in class. These are med students in their 20s, you know, discussing things, asking girls to stand up and spin around so they could take a look at them. Like, just, you know, behavior out of like Mad Men or something like that. Yet it's 2017. And when you see a guy like that as the boss of Larry Nassar, and then someone who defended Larry Nassar and made rulings greatly in favor of Larry Nassar, you can see where this is beyond just one lone wolf going on. There was a culture created and an ability for Larry Nassar to just keep pushing forward. And that's the real tragedy. The other stuff that Michigan State is dealing with, almost every campus is dealing with, and how to handle these things. But the idea that they would have this with the Nassar case, and then when complaints come in or when whispers come in, nobody's investigating Larry Nassar, or when there are investigations, the boss, who's now also under arrest, defends him. And then you have this fallout where we have an interim president who has not seemed to be particularly adept at showing any kind of sympathy for victims or anything like that. And you know, a lot of these kids that got victimized at Michigan State had nothing to do with Michigan State. They were 13-year-old girls who got injured playing youth sports and had their case referred to Larry Nassar and just showed up at a doctor's appointment. But, you know, but it's still a Michigan State doctor on the campus of Michigan State. The idea that there'd be any kind of blowback or pushback against somebody like that is mind-blowing to me.
And then the latest story was Friday, when not only was there pushback, but it's pushback that everybody saw and heard, when one of Nassar's victims, Kaylee Lawrence, at the trustees' meeting, described in detail a meeting that she had with interim president John Engler, in which she was apparently coerced into trying to accept money to essentially go away. And he has not, other than a couple of blithe dismissals of what she said, has not really fought her contention on its merits. There were gasps in the room. And as this was described, you can't believe it. And it comes down to me what you said about sympathy or empathy, where some of the mistakes early on that Penn State made, and the Penn State that the Joe bots continue to make, it's ongoing. We saw the letter that they sent HBO about a movie signed by Franco Harris and all those people. It has to do with them being victimized. They are the victims. Everything all these problems are in their world, yet not understanding that they're not the victims. And when I saw that playbook again, when I saw Engler trying to bully this girl, then I'm thinking, here, this is happening again. Michigan State thinks it's being victimized.
Right. If you go back at Penn State when the scandal first broke, the first statement that came out of Graham Spanier, the president of Penn State, was a defense of the two guys he ended up being charged with also and being serving time with. The AD and the vice president. It was about how I 100% back these guys and I believe them 100%. And it's a short statement, but at no point in the statement did it say, I'm absolutely horrified that these kids were abused and had anything to do with Penn State or just in general, right? No mention of the victims. It was all about them. It's a lot like that at Michigan State. And that's what's surprising. Now, Michigan State got rid of its president. They brought in as an interim the former governor of Michigan, John Engler. Now, John Engler served three terms. John Engler is a hard-nosed politician. He was extremely effective in what he wanted to accomplish, whether you agree with what he wanted to accomplish or not, is your own political fight. But he would push people. He would bully. He would argue. He would whip the legislature into action. He's a tough politician. He's the absolute last guy you want handling this. That personality doesn't work. And he's kind of come out of retirement, sort of, and it's like he's playing hardball politics just for the fun of it. So he's on campus a couple weeks ago, and this woman, Kaylee, comes in with her mother, and they're going to sign up to speak at the board of directors meeting, and they see John Engler, and they say, hey, can we meet with you? Because we don't think you're really grasping hear my story, and maybe you'll have a better opinion of some of the victims here. So Kaylee is 18 years old now. She was referred to Larry Nassar, 13, and was molested and raped systematically at age 13. She's a middle schooler. Okay, this is she's a terrific kid, and her, she's 18 now. But her mom, the whole family. I've met them. I've seen you'd break down crying looking at them and going, God, I can't believe this happened to her. Right? John Engler says, sure, let's meet. Sits them in there and says, if I give you $250,000, will you go away right now? And it says, and they go, well, that's not what we're meeting about. Yeah, yes, there's a lawsuit. And there's a lawsuit because they're victims of crimes. And there's a lawsuit because they have incredible, health care bills, psychology, all the different things that have gone into this. And then he said, he's going, well, name a number and doing she doesn't have her lawyer present. She's an 18-year-old. She looks about 15, which, she's legally 18, but this is not a negotiation, and he is doing this. Now, it's just stupid for him to meet with them under that pretense. You sit down and say, tell me your story. Thank you. I'll take that into heart. You have a finesse to it. He has none. This is John Engler, for better or worse. But in this case, the absolute wrong guy to be talking to her. Now, she tells this story last Friday of her meeting with John Engler, her and her mother. And she tells it to the board of directors. He also lied about another victim offering up a number, which wasn't true. So he's lying and negotiating, if you will, under false pretenses without her lawyer. The whole thing is a mess. She tells this story. She's telling this story, and people are gasping and saying, I can't believe he's doing this, at the board of trustees meeting. And during the meeting, John Engler waits. She's supposed to have 3 minutes of allotted time, and she's going to go maybe 3:20, mm-hmm. 3:30. And at 3 minutes, he says, Kayla, you're done. Sit down. We're done with you. And he's shouting it at her. And it's unbelievable. If it wasn't for all the news that comes out of Washington that's turned cable news into just 24-hour Trump, this video would have been on loop all weekend. And, you know, Penn State got a lot more attention than Michigan State because Donald Trump didn't control the media the way he does now, however you want to see that. But it's all Trump. So other news gets blocked. This video is incredible. I mean, here is the former governor. He's in his 60s. He's a big guy. And he's literally telling this woman to sit down. Your time's up. I've had enough of this. And she's telling a story about him. This, you know, and again, she's about 4'10". She looks young. She was molested as a middle schooler by their doctor on their campus. And this is the way he's treating her. And so, you know, it's not a criminal act to do this. But you look at it and you're just horrified that anybody would do this. And you go, why would Michigan State want to be represented this way? How could this, what is to gain here? But in John Engler's mind, it appears, it's just, hey, this is like I'm yelling at the Speaker of the House over some bill, or I'm yelling at some political opponent. It's just brass knuckle stuff. And it's like, this isn't brass knuckle stuff. This is a kid who got molested as a seventh grader. You sit there and let her speak and let her say whatever she wants. You don't care about parliamentary rules. You've only got 3 minutes to talk. So it's an incredible video, and the scene was absolutely nuts. And the crowd's chanting, let her speak, and finally she finishes, and Engler just is extremely dismissive of her and all of them.
Dan, Michigan State obviously figures prominently in the story for obvious reasons. Team USA gymnastics kind of feels like they're in the shadows on this, or at least they do in the reporting realm so far to me. Is that because they don't have the same, I don't know, institutional reputation as a major college like Michigan State? Is it because they acted faster in firing their board? The kids, the athletes, the women who were molested by Larry Nassar had critical things to say about Team USA gymnastics, some as well.
Yes, and USA Gymnastics is equally culpable as Michigan State. I mean, they were letting Larry Nassar treat young gymnasts alone in their dorm room. Mandatory treatments. I mean, it's just ridiculous behavior, ridiculous rules. And you can think of the pressure that a young gymnast is at these camps where, you know, the one thing we have in America is incredible gymnastics. And there's 20 girls that can go to the Olympics, and only five are going to be able to. So you shut up. You don't do it. The way they set that camp up and the way they let Nassar, the thing USA Gymnastics did is, yeah, everybody's gone. And they don't have, just as a body, they don't have board of trustee meetings like Michigan State that are public and can create these kind of moments for people to address them. It's a private organization. So you don't have this, but you also, like, who are you going to yell at there? They're all new, and they're all trying to salvage this deal, where with Michigan State, it's more of a process. And then the Michigan State settlements, legal settlements, will probably come first. But Penn State, if anything, was, you know, saw this as a PR thing too, and just said, let's just get this over with. We're gonna settle. We're gonna do it quickly. We're gonna try to be as forgiving as possible, as you know, respectful as possible to the victims. And they've received criticism from that from some of their people that, you know, hey, you know, you should have fought this one, or you should. Penn State kind of rolled over, but they said, look, this is the right thing. Maybe, you know, we did a lot of wrong here. And Engler seems to be going the other route. And he again on Friday talked about why we're going to, you know, it might be a 2.9% tuition increase to pay for these civil suits. He kind of declares it like, it's the civil suits problem that I'm going to have to raise your tuition, or it's the civil suits problem that taxpayers might have to pay for this in Michigan. And it's like, no, it's not the civil suits problem. It's Larry Nassar's problem. It's the school's problem. It's the lack of, you know, your own doctor was molesting kids across the state. That's the problem. And so when you put it on the civil suits, it makes it like these kids are looking for money and something. And there isn't a single one I ever met that wouldn't trade whatever dollar they're going to get to never have walked into Larry Nassar's thing. And I just, there's just a lack of tone. And I just think when Michigan State took a guy who might be effective in other avenues for them, I mean, this is an accomplished guy. He's a three-time governor. You don't just, you know, luck into that. But to put him in this role at this time just makes zero sense to me, and it's playing out that way.
Meanwhile, the Title IX lawsuit gets filed. It is alleging a sexual assault by another Michigan State basketball player or players against a female student. And we know that it's possible. Look, Engler could be out. The Board of Trustees could resign. They don't have a permanent president. They don't have an athletic director. And what we've been raising this question, too, is considering the broad base of turmoil there, what athletic director would want to take over knowing that Tom Izzo is still in place and remains de facto the most powerful single person at that university with everything that is hanging over the head of the basketball program? I mean, there's so many aspects to this with so many positions that have to be filled. And are all the decisions going to be made for the right reasons to make sure the campus is as safe as possible?
Yeah, it's hard to know, you know, who exactly wants the job. I mean, it's still the athletic director of Michigan State. It's still, but you could be cleaning up a mess. This could spin in different directions. You know, you have this last lawsuit. Now it's a civil suit. It's not a criminal charge. It's very, you know, you got to be fair on these things, and so we don't know what's accurate or not accurate. Nothing's been adjudicated on that, but it is a civil suit. It is another allegation on where you go, but we don't you don't really know on all of these things. So all you can really go with is what's been proven in court or acknowledged, and that's more of the Nassar situation. But certainly a lot of turmoil and in flux, and I just think. I mean, I live in Michigan. I have no ties to Michigan State, but my friends that are alums or people that work at the school, I mean, everyone's horrified by this. And I think there's a disappointment that the university is not handling this the way, you know, like they're horrified or it's horrified. And I think that's the most trouble. Like, nobody's sitting there saying, oh, so glad Larry, no one's defending Larry Nassar. It's like, well, how do we get through this? And I'm not sure the school is taking that tact, or it just feels to be a lot more combative than this, because there's not a Larry Nassar fan club out there. Well, there always is, but there's a small one. But not amongst the Michigan State alums and students and professors. They just want their school back. I mean, this isn't what they want the school to be about. Unfortunately, right now, that's what it is.
Well, Dan, I like the fact that you never shy away from some of these difficult-to-cover stories, and you always do some of the best work under these circumstances, and we appreciate you joining us once again.
Hey, thanks, anytime, I guess. We'll keep having them, I'm sure.
I'm sure, sadly enough, yeah. I'm sure we will. Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports, brought to you by Walgreens. Walgreens has your trusted favorites in cosmetics, skin care, and hair care, plus new premium and exclusive beauty products. Stop by and find what makes you feel beautiful.
It just gets to a point. It gets to a point where defending the university, and there are those who will, is just throwing yourself up against the same wall over and over again. And it's why I asked the question, and I understand his point, you know, at the end there about how he has to deal with things that have been adjudicated. He has to deal with things that have been, you know, proven through courts and whatnot. But as you find more and more about this story of former Michigan State ball players and a rape allegation and how the university has told its students to get help, literally the process of going to get help, that process, it seems, starts with 3.5 weeks of waiting. And it, to me, it that doesn't seem like a really great way to treat psychological trauma, much less physical trauma.
They want to cool it off and hope it goes away.
That's been the institutional policy for Michigan State, helping their own students.
That's crazy.
It's mind-boggling to me. It really is. And when we start, we use words like systemic, it's really easy to sensationalize that word because it sounds so scary, right? Because it sounds as though you've got, it sounds conspiratorial. In this case, it's starting to feel more and more true.
Where you're getting close to Catholic Church level stuff.
Feels that way.
People in power who have been taught over years to do things a certain way to protect the institution.
This is okay.
He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. This is Bernstein and McKnight. There are some conflicting stories regarding the status of tonight's Cubs game.
Can't imagine why.
I don't have any official information at this point. I know that there are discussions that are occurring regarding what the likely conditions are and wind chills that are in the 20s or perhaps even in the teens, depending on those northwest 18-mile-an-hour gusts. But you know, nothing official yet. But my guess is that they would err on the side of caution, especially considering how hard Joe Maddon went. But as soon as we know something official, I promise we will let you know exactly when we do on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And right now, caller 6 to the contest line, 312-591-6700, wins a pair of tickets to a Chicago Wolves playoff game. How about that?
It's good stuff.
You hear about it, then maybe you get to go. So MLB is still trying to figure out what is going on with its slate of games right now, with some historical mid-April cold affecting a wide swath of this country and another country.
And apparently, just putting a roof on it doesn't do it for you.
Why?
This in USA Today. Falling ice may force the Blue Jays to postpone today's game despite having a roof on the Rogers Center.
Ice falling inside?
Due to falling ice from the nearby CN Tower. That's the big spire-like thing.
I've been there. I've been to the top of it.
It looks like Skyview at Great America, that kind of thing, or Skytrack.
I almost threw up. I went to the top of CN Tower, and they have the glass floor thing.
Can't
do it.
They still have that. That's also where the hotel is pressed up against one, and you always there's B-roll of people enjoying themselves in the hotel during games. Okay, so apparently due to falling ice from the nearby CN Tower, the Blue Jays announced that they're going to have to assess the conditions around Rogers Center and the viability of playing tonight's game against the Royals. The police on Monday warned of falling ice and closed the tower. Apparently the ice popped a hole in the Rogers Center roof right above the field, and they had a bunch of snow on the playing surface. Obviously, if you've got a roof, you're not equipped probably to tear off snow like you would be, you know, on the south side or on the north side here.
Wow.
They might have to postpone a game with a roof.
Wow. I mean, we've had roof collapses before.
Yeah, the Triple H collapsed, right?
We've seen that happen because the snow on it collapses it. But falling ice from another building, and it's right above it.
It is, yeah. There's a really cool photo in the story of it. I mean, it's just right there.
Yeah, from that glass floor, you look down right on top of the dome there.
It's creepy.
It's awful. I couldn't do it. It's just like something innately, I could not step onto the glass floor because there's just something my brain wouldn't let me risk dying somehow.
I know we've got the update music in the background, but we have some news, some show news.
Yes.
To reveal.
A programming news that we promised earlier will be delivered next. You spit it out, Tubby.
I love that one.
Jeez.
Oh, man. You know, I have been to the bar in Arizona where apparently
the You're With Me Leather
episode happened. Yeah, I walked over. It was commemorated with a brass plaque. It was very impressive.
No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
What bar?
I believe it's the library, which is in Tempe. It is no longer there. The library is gone.
Okay, I was at a place called the Library in Salt Lake City. But not,
I think it's a different vibe.
It was great.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe not then.
It was great.
Yes. My library experience was also quite, quite good.
Yeah. Salt Lake City, underrated party town.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, you have
I've got a magazine in front of me.
Yeah.
It's cost $9.99 down at the newsstand. I know that because we bought a couple. I had asked, and actually we'd had a lot of texters ask when we started the show, Dan, whether or not we're going to bring a time-honored tradition back to these airwaves, something that you've done for quite some time. And, you know, we're coming up on it. Coming up on the 1999 annual draft, or whatever the hell Chris Berman was talking about. Who's your guy will return?
Yes!
Who's your guy will return?
Yes, we are going to do Who's Your Guy. Now, we were in talks. We were in high-level talks.
We were in negotiations.
In these hallways, because we're going to have to... We're taking a little leap of faith this year, because Nolan Naraki is not producing his annual draft guide.
Right.
It had been the Pro Football Weekly draft guide, and then Nolan Naraki was doing it on his own, under
solo
his
act.
Own name. And usually the publisher would send a note and say, hey, you want a bunch of copies of the book for Who's Your Guy?
Yes.
And they didn't arrive. So I emailed the publisher and I said, hey, you know, this is time for your annual question. He said, Nolan is not doing a draft guide this year. So we figured that with the amount of information available to us, we are going to cobble together one way or another. And if you give us a little bit of latitude on some of these phone calls, making sure that we're covered in real time here.
Yep, we need a little help on that from you guys.
But between with all that's available, with NFL.com, with Athlons, with Hub Arkish and Greg Gabriel and the Pro Football Weekly Guide that they put together, with Pro Football Focus, with so many, Dan Shonka and our lads.
Yeah, Shonka does a good one.
There are multiple draft guides that are available. And we're going to do it. We are going to do Who's Your Guy.
Yes.
And here's what's great is that I don't have to do all the reading.
No, you don't.
Because initially people said, well, why do you do the reading? Because Terry just couldn't do it and didn't want to. And I don't know what it says, buddy.
Terry, famously, great writer, unable to read.
Yes, people don't realize that.
Can't read.
Yeah, functionally illiterate when it comes to reading.
It's like Charlie Day.
So it always fell on me to do the reading for lo those many years. And now we're actually going to be able to share the It's a solemn and sacred responsibility.
Yes.
Reading the scouting reports for Who's Your Guy. But once again, we will be doing our draft homework together and making fun of scouting terms.
I'm looking forward to it. I know a lot of people listening to the show had been asking about it quite some time. I'd gotten some questions on Twitter and happy to do it. I'd always, when I moved back to Chicago and before I started working here, I'd always liked listening to Who's Your Guy because it was fun to hear the random ass college players that people would call in with and then proclaim that's my guy. It was crazy to me.
And the best thing is draft day when people would remember not necessarily something significant about the guy that they heard doing Who's Your Guy, but something really silly that had come up on the segment.
Always about someone's hips,
and then,
too.
And then it's, and how loose and fluid they are. This just handed to me.
Uh-huh.
Tonight's game between the Chicago Cubs and St. Louis Cardinals at Wrigley Field has been postponed due to the forecast for inclement weather throughout the day and wind chills in the 20s this evening.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Tonight's game will be made up Saturday, July 1st, as the first game of a split doubleheader at Wrigley Field.
I've got a July 21st.
That, what did I say?
I don't know. I think you said July 1st.
July 21st,
okay,
excuse
just
me.
I want to make sure. People are going online to buy their tickets.
Again, reading.
Proofreading.
The makeup game will be played at 12:05 p.m. and will be followed by the regularly scheduled night game at 6:15 p.m. Separate tickets will be required for each game. Tickets to tonight's game at Wrigley will be honored for the 12:05 p.m. makeup game on July 21st. No ticket exchange is necessary.
Ah.
So there are the specifics. Cubs Cardinals postponed,
and maybe the Blue Jays game at Rogers Center,
even though it's
the
inside.
Hole in the roof.
And it also means that time to start researching show topics for tomorrow. We'll still have Joe tomorrow, right? He's got nowhere to be.
Yeah, we'll have Joe.
Joe Madden at
talk
noon.
Talk to Joe about snow angels and how best to make them.
Actually, it gives us an opportunity to not talk baseball.
To get a little weird.
Why not?
Yeah, I suppose that's a pretty decent. Maybe I'll stop by a wine place. You know, find a nice little bottle. We can all discuss together. Get a little whiny.
Yeah, if we always do. If baseball is not top of mind over the last couple of days, why force it with him?
Yeah,
maybe just sort of spread our wings a little bit.
I think it's probably about time to do it too. A couple of texts coming in about the Who's Your Guy stuff. We're going to be using a lot of people are suggesting, you know, places to grab scouting reports and whatnot, now that Nolan Naraki is not doing his draft report. We're going to find, and a lot of you have texted in some of the places that we will be pulling some scouting reports from. So thank you for the updates. And
yeah,
for the,
appreciate
for the advice,
all that.
No, really, truly appreciate it, because we're going to be grabbing from a bunch of different places our best ways to do draft reports for you.
There you have it. He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. And I see Dan McNeil wandering the hallways. Does that mean he's going to be on? It does. I got a thumbs up from Jay Zawoski.
Right.
So that means that it actually will be McNeil and Parkins. He's sort of pacing around like a caged giant cat of your choice, whichever one you may select.
Bobcat, I think. We decided last week that was, in fact, a giant cat.
No, it's
right?
Big.
Big, but not giant?
No. When I hear giant cat,
Tiger?
Tiger or lion.
Lemur?
What?
No.
A lemur isn't even a cat.
I'm just
James?
Wondering.
No. No, big
but
cat.
But a liger.
No. There is such a thing,
there
right?
There is such a thing. They get really big.
Yes.
In fact, the problem with a liger is that the glands, they don't stop them from growing. They're like a pituitary thing.
So you get like an acromegaliac cat?
Yes. An Andre the Giant cat.
A Pavel Podkolzin cat.
Will not stop growing.
A lemur?
Yeah. Lemur.
Lemur is a prosimian.
Well,
it's closer in relation to like
so
us.
So it's
than
not
it is
a giant cat then?
No, it's not even close. Lemurs, tarsiers, the eye is one that I don't think is technically a lemur or a tarsier.
I want the Bears to draft him.
Which guy? Lemur, tarsier?
Eye.
Quick in the hips.
Yeah, that's the weird looking. The eye is the one with the really long toes.
Great,
I think.
In space.
Isn't that right? We had to study these in anthropology.
I made the mistake just moments ago that a lemur was a cat. Apparently it's not.
It's closer to a monkey.
All right, then.
Come on. You got to know that. No. I know you're more a humanities side guy, but you got to... I mean, there had to be some requirement somewhere.
Apparently when I was watching Planet Earth, I got a little too into the Earth and less not enough into the planet.
That's Connor McKnight. And indeed, you will have McNeil and Parkins, and we'll say good afternoon to them shortly on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Everybody was doing that, the TV where I was
Gus.
Gathered. I mean, Gus, only Gus Johnson can Gus Johnson the way Gus Johnson Gus Johnson's, but that's that was a pretty amazing shot.
It was incredible. I wish the overtime had kind of lived up to that, though.
Yeah, that rarely does, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
But there are just so many made shots. There were in these games. The Toronto game, Toronto and Washington, it's just each next one, bang, and then they come back and they answer again, and they just don't go away. And this might be the year. It might be the year the Raptors are something better than I think they are.
Yeah, I know Brian Geltzeiler is kind of sold on at least his fears of Toronto. Torontoing have kind of been allayed by, I think, the Eastern Conference and just what it looks like on the whole and obviously their quality of play. And you seem to be checking yourself too just a little bit. You seem to be little bit more optimistic about them than usually are.
Well, they end up when their second unit, and that was without Fred VanVleet, too. It was not one of their top second unit guys. They figured out how to use their bench. They started trusting a guy like Jakob Poeltl to do what he does. He's a pretty effective player, and once they realized they just, over the course of this 82, they haven't had to lean on their stars. They're a little bit fresher. They're certainly a little bit smarter, and DeRozan's range now is legit, and the geometry changes in some of these closeouts.
Yeah, I was asking a little bit too about back to the Bucks game a little bit. The Giannis thing makes me frustrated in that no one's ever given him the full go. It seems no one's, whether it's Jason Kidd, it seems as though no one's ever given him the runway. Whether that's a system that's around him, players that need to be around him, maybe it's all of the above, but. You know, I kind of got a little frustrated with the Damian Lillard, Anthony Davis thing, hoping that, you know, either one of them would really take off and seeing as they were seated against each other. I'd like to see either one of those both of those players in another round this year. Giannis, I kind of feel the same way. And then, you know, look up the Giannis. He is 23.
Yep.
23. And I am frustrated.
Improving. Still getting better.
And I am frustrated that he hasn't done more yet. So really, what I'm saying is I'm not right there. I'm wrong. I need to remember that he's 23 and still has plenty of time to get things going in that team.
Is he a point guard? Is he a center?
I want all these answers, and I want them in the playoffs, and I want them against the Celtics team that has been ripped apart by some injuries. I want all this now, and they didn't give it.
If they were smart, they would play more Giannis at center lineups, because John Henson was a bum in the second half. And then at that point, you're looking at, what, Al Horford against Giannis?
Right.
Okay. How is he going to keep up? If they give him enough space, how is he going to keep up with him?
He won't, but Al Horford, and we're always reminded when you watch him in the playoffs, and you're reminded when he's forced to take on a bit of a larger role, that Al Horford knows how to play the pro game, man. He knows how to find his spots. He knows leverage. And can he go foul hunting? That guy, he can get himself to the line, and he's not a spectacular athlete. He isn't, but he is. He really knows angles, and he understands when he's got you leaning just a little bit. I mean, it's not like James Harden level kind of stuff in that regard.
Lord,
that's
no.
Just magic. But they were running all those screen rolls through him, and I thought later they were going to do some more. But I don't see a reason not to involve him in pick and roll and let him have the ball at some point.
We talked earlier about you're watching James Harden and how it's a little incongruous to you, I guess.
Yeah, it just doesn't look right.
Does any of it have to do with the fact that he wears old man socks?
Maybe.
Does that have anything to do with it?
Maybe it's the beard and the kinesio tape and everything, but there's just something that I don't find aesthetically pleasing, even though I appreciate how good he is at basketball. It's all the herky-jerky stuff. He's got weird angles, and he moves his shoulders oddly.
Some of that helps him.
It all does.
When you watch him, he'll come down on a pick and roll or something like that and decide to keep the ball and reverse back toward the 3-point line.
Yes.
And then shuffle down the lane faster than it's almost, I saw on Twitter people, you stop him from going left. Don't let him use the left. Stop him going left. How hard that is to do.
It's like Le'Veon Bell running the football. It's like when people say, watch Le'Veon Bell after he takes a handoff and he comes to a complete stop. And
the patience.
There's so few running backs that will literally stop, and then very few people like Harden can just stop and then immediately make a joystick move to get where he wants with the ball while holding somebody off with his other hand. He makes you run into him. He creates fouls better than anybody at his size that I've ever seen.
I know it was a 3-point game, and I know the Timberwolves had some issues, usage wise anyways, but I don't get the sense that they're in trouble. But Justin Fan, who covers the team, tweeted this out a little while ago. You know the usage numbers for the Timberwolves in that game one? Derrick Rose led the team at 30.8%.
Wow. I mean, it was moving through him every time.
Jang at 28.6%, Teague at 26.4%, and he really came on late in the game, more so than he did early. Wiggins at 25.7%. Towns. Karl-Anthony Towns is at the bottom of the list and bearing the 14.2%. And we were talking earlier about finding mismatches, right? We had a couple of people who texted in saying, well, he was sitting out there at the 3-point line trying to take shots. That's why you can't find the mismatches. That's the point! Get him to places on the floor where you've got those. Find him in those places where the mismatch is actually occurring. Not out on the. That's where you've got to beat them.
This segment brought to you by Credit Karma. Get your truly free credit score and free credit monitoring from Credit Karma. Download the Credit Karma app today. Credit Karma, get knowing. The 515. And I don't know where the 515 is, but there's somebody really funny who continually texts for the 515.
I'm on it.
Who says the invocation, Connor's invocation of lemur on a list of the great cats makes the Mount Rushmore.
Big cats.
Big cats. The Mount Rushmore of poor stream of consciousness moments in the history of radio.
You're welcome.
He said number one.
You're welcome.
Number one, of course, is Veronica Lake trying to seduce Charlie McCarthy. Okay.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
fair enough. Yeah, I think I was going for lynx and said lemur instead, but at this point, I've just kind of got to own it.
Well, I think lynx and bobcat are not interchangeable. Are they interchangeable?
You're looking at me. I offered you lemur as a cat. I don't think I can. Now you're asking me questions about this. It's just trolling for the sake of trolling.
I'm not really asking you. I'm just sort of asking because we had researched bobcats before when somebody claimed to have seen one in the neighborhood. And
we thought we were talking to Bobcat Goldthwait.
It might just be a large feral cat, but no, they're much larger than large feral cats.
Look, if the 515 turns out to be in Madagascar, then it's on me because I should have known.
Did, where
if
is
this
the,
person knows.
Did you look it up? Where the 515
middle
is?
Of Iowa. Des Moines, Ames, Ankeny, Humboldt, Boone, Fort Dodge, Jefferson, Angola, Indianola. Apparently there's a town named Indianola.
Davenport, Marshalltown, Keokuk, Ames, Clear Lake.
Dallas Center, too, which is a town of 500 people. I'm related to about 490 of them.
Nothing for the music, man. Nothing.
No, I hate that musical. With the passion of a thousand
sons. That one in high school.
I can't stand that. It's awful. It's bad. It's awful.
You hate the music,
it's terrible.
It gave you the monorail episode from The Simpsons.
Great. Best thing it's ever done.
If there's no Music Man, there's no monorail episode. So, oh, come on. Robert Preston is Harold
Hale? Can't stand it.
Nothing?
Can't stand it.
Really?
I think it's one of the most overblown pieces of American music in history.
Okay.
See, we tried to do that in high school with bad brass players. So that made
it a little problematic. Can't do it.
Though. 76 cornets.
76 Barry Saxons.
No, 76
Saxons.
Trombones.
76 trombones.
110 cornets.
Yes.
Except it was
all of it bad.
Except it was 76 Barry Saxes and 110 muffled trombones.
Too many trombones. Yeah. Too many cornets. Cancel the damn thing.
And Rick, what was your role?
I was playing Barry Sax in the pit.
Oh, there you go. I was Mayor Shin. I was pissed off I didn't get the role of Harold Hill, but Tommy Gottlieb got to be Harold Hill, and I got to be Mayor Shin.
Our Harold, I protested the whole thing.
Our Harold Hill broke his collarbone 2 days before we opened. It went great.
This is going great. He's like cradling his arm the whole time.
Yeah, like the dancing scenes, they're acting like the arm is still there, and it's just not.
We got trouble right here in River City. Ow! Yeah. Now
the capital P stands for pain.
Capital P stands for pain. Oh, I'm in such pain. I got to reassess now. Maybe it was bad.
It is bad. It's very bad.
Is it?
Yes.
I'd say better than South Pacific. We did that one too, and that was just awful.
That's Mitzi Gaynor and Wash That Man
that
Right
one
Out of
I
My
Don't
Hair.
Know. Yeah, oh, really? Is that what that is?
I think so.
I only know that from a Clouseau movie.
Yeah,
actually.
I don't have. We never did South Pacific, so that's.
You're better off for it.
Were you in the Mitzi Gaynor role in that, Rick?
Yes. I was also in the pit.
Stay in the pit. He's in the rancor pit.
It stays in the pit, or else it gets the hose again.
We get McNeil and Parkins next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.